My first ever memory is being at my great granny and granda's house and running in their door. And my granny, she was like classy lady. She always wore like wee dresses and cardigans.
Oh, come on, yeah.
And she always had a tin of biscuits or a tin of sweets. So as soon, because I'm the first child of this generation in my family, so I was the first great grandchild.
Me too. I know what it's like.
They love you.
The blessings and the curses. You know,
Oh, definitely.
They're both real.
Both extremes.
Yeah.
But she'd like come at you with a box of sweets. So I remember running into her house, getting some sweets, and going to sit with my great granda.
Wow. I mean, it's so amazing that you had memories of your great grandparents.
Oh yeah,
Like, I'm very fortunate. Like, I spent a lot of time with my great granny, and like, I've only realized in recent years like just how precious that was. Is this the same granny with the teeth, or is that the next generation
So
down?
that was, yeah, so that the one with the teeth is my granny,
Right.
and that one with the sweets was her mum.
Ah, so where did great granny and granda live? Where was that for them?
They lived down around Mountjoy in
Classic.
Tyrone. So I'm originally from Omagh.
Nice.
And my mum's side of the family, my great granny, they all lived in that kind of Omagh vicinity, and they still do.
Wow. And like historically, like farming background, or what were they at?
Yes, so they had a farm.
Nice.
They had a farm, lived out in the country. My mum, although my grandparents, her parents lived in this in the town, nearly said in the city of Omagh.
The big smoke.
The
I mean,
big city
come
of Omagh.
on.
Her parents lived out in the country. So like now my mum has moved out to the country because her childhood,
Yeah.
she associates the country with that because she spent so much time there with them.
Amazing.
So I think that's where like I love living by the city,
Yeah.
and I'll always kind of live around the city, but ultimately I want to live by a field and see
Yeah.
cows.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I mean, there are kind of Northern Ireland's very, as you know, it's almost possible to have both.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it's such a weird place where it's like, I'm in the city and 5 minutes later, no, I'm not in the city. So, you know,
And I will find that spot for my
dreams can come true, you know. We moved out to Dromore a year ago and we're like dreading. It's like, oh no, how are we ever going to survive like being away from the city? And honestly, I'm just like,
Best thing ever.
it's door to door 25 minutes. Like literally to this chair where I'm sitting with this microphone is 25 minutes. I'm like,
Well, we're
dude.
actually house shopping at the moment for our like next home
Nice.
because we sold our house when I was in America.
Yeah.
And it's so hard
It's
because,
impossible.
yeah, it's so hard to find somewhere, but that's what we're wanting. We're wanting something just a bit outside, bit of space, bit outside the city, but where we can kind of commute in handy enough.
And you gotta look because like literally like we were driving to look at the house in Dromore and I was like literally huffing, like I was so grumpy. My wife was like, why did you book us in to look at the house in Dromore? Like I've never even been to Dromore, it's like so far away. Like
What even is that place?
yeah, literally like giving it stacks and then like you know got there and blah 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 blah. But like there's so many places like that around the city where you don't know until you go and you see, you know. So
And now you're Dromore's number one fan.
and now literally I'm a disciple of Dromore, like I preach the gospel of Dromore to anyone who will listen. I'm a big, big fan. So tell me about you as a child. Like, what sort of things were you interested in? Were cows, did cows feature on the list, or kind of what came after that?
Not really. I was a bit of a tomboy,
Awesome.
for sure. I wanted to be a car mechanic,
Oh,
just
love
like
it.
my granda. And I was incredibly nosy, very, very nosy child, still kind of nosy.
We'll say curious, you know?
Well, yeah,
We'll give you the nice
I
label.
used to go for that. I did, and then I was like, you know what? Who are you kidding? You went and did psychology because you're a nosy person. That's it. So you're just, I'm channeling it into healthy ways. But yeah, no, I just was quite quiet, very shy, not very out there or active. And my family are so close-knit. I think to me, family has always been such a big thing. So like I was best friends with my cousin.
I do love like, and I envy kind of that like family relationship. I was the first kid by a mile, so anyone coming after me was just like too young and boring. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
So going through school, what was your primary experience like? Because I know you do a lot of work with primary school kids today, so you probably are able to tap into your own experience, reflect on your own experience more than the average Joe, because even just being around that environment, I assume it brings so much back, you know?
I've actually done, personally, I've done quite a lot of work on those years. On tapping into my inner child sort of thing. And I had to do that obviously with the help of professionals and counselors because it's something that, see if you'd said to me about it about 4 years ago, I would have been like, catch yourself on.
Eye roll, yeah.
Your inner child.
Yeah.
But whenever she brought it up, I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you trying to get me to do here? Yeah. But it was so amazing because that inner child, and I think my neglect of the Nadia in primary school age and me forgetting her kind of fed into a lot of negative feelings I would have had about myself.
Wow.
But when I was in primary school, again, one of the first memories, I remember my PT teacher telling me not to be so nosy.
Brutal.
So, she's still there as well. But it was good. I had a good time in primary school, relatively happy. I was never like a A-star child or an A child, you know what I mean? But I got by. I had to work hard for what I got because it doesn't just come naturally. But I did get bullied as well. So that's kind of whenever I started going into schools again, that's something that I started to remember more of.
Yeah. A little bit of that re-traumatizing.
Exactly.
We just did a trauma interview yesterday, so it's very top of mind. I don't know when all this will go out, but sure.
No, exactly. Like, I started to kind of remember more little bits of being bullied.
Interesting.
And like, the girls that bullied me, it was three girls. I talk to them all now.
Yeah.
Like, we became friends in secondary school. But at the time, I think I was so quiet and into myself, I didn't want to say boo.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have said or done whatever they wanted and I wasn't saying anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, and all of that, it was good. I actually went back to my primary school about 3 weeks ago.
That's very strange. Mm-hmm. I find that a very strange experience.
It was so weird because obviously I work in primary schools now and I was passing through and I was like, you know what, I'll pop into the school, see if they want to hear about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the principal now was a teacher when I was there.
Ah.
My P6 teacher's still there.
Crazy.
So she brought me in. I was sitting having lunch with them and chatting away. My P5 teacher is the principal of another school in the principal's office.
Oh,
and I wasn't in trouble.
I don't know. Did you ever watch Recess growing up?
Yes, always.
Oh my goodness. There's this Recess episode. It's like burned into my memory. And it's like, they're like trying to imagine what the staff room's like.
Yes.
And each of them have like all of these different kind of like visualizations and all. And then they go in and they open it and it's like the crappiest wee room ever. But it is so mythical. And again, you go back to your primary school, you're like, this place is so much smaller than I remember it.
Do you know what kind of destroyed me?
Borrower's land.
Yeah. Like, I went back, I did in secondary school, near the start, we had to do work experience for like a week. And I went back to middle primary school because I was like, I don't know where I'm going to go for work experience. And obviously went back and I was super excited because I remembered school dinners were amazing. I loved them.
Better than back lunch.
Oh, so good. And I got gravy on absolutely everything.
Sure, yeah.
You name it, there was gravy on it. And I was so excited to go back and get these school dinners at lunch. And they were disgusting. They were absolutely rotten. I was like, what was I traumatized then? And that's when I thought these were good.
Or you just say, you know, oh, the food standards really slipping. Like, back in my day, I remember the mushy peas were fresh. You're like, wait, what does that even mean?
Oh.
I really love what you said about the inner child. That's really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite musicians, a guy called Andy Mineo, he just dropped a new album. Actually, he dropped one album ages ago called Neverland.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, like, Peter Pan vibes and themes going in. And he talks a lot about like the child and the boy who never grew up. But this recent album, it really shook me. Like, at the end of some of the songs, there's like this little boy's voice. And she says, don't forget about me.
Aww.
And then you kind of listen to it and you're like, wait, what was that? You know, you almost take your headphones off. You're like, what? That's weird.
Yeah.
And you hear it again. And you're like, oh, this is kind of part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of it, like the little boy is like really excited and jumping up and down. It's like, yes, like, Andy, thank you so much. You remembered about me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and listen to it, the whole kind of narrative of the album is him trying to reconnect with his inner child. And it really hit me because it's something that, again, probably only in the last 3 years, and if I'm brutally honest, I know this is a cliche, like probably only really after the birth of my daughter have I really started to reconnect to the child inside myself.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she has almost taken me by the hand and allowed me to reconnect with so many parts of that child.
Yeah.
You know, like, I took her to, I'm born and bred in Lisburn, a park called Duncan's Dam. It's
okay.
Like literally in the middle of Lisburn. I used to go over to my grandparents and feed ducks. And I was just there with my daughter, like, feeding down. I was having, like, a bit of a crisis. Like, oh, my word, I'm so old.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I was like, wow, like, I'm loving this.
Yeah.
And I never since I was a child, have stopped to look at ducks the same way I am doing now. So that's a very long-winded way of saying, tell me a wee bit more about that inner child. Like, give me a bit more on it. Why is it important? How has connecting with it kind of helped unlock other areas of your life?
I think for me, so it's kind of, I speak very openly about how my relationship with myself, especially kind of university age and secondary school age and going up, was never good.
Yeah.
Like, my fiance, even now, if you ask him when we first met, he's like, I don't know someone who hated themselves so much.
Brutal.
And hearing him say the word hate, I was like, I didn't hate myself. He goes, Natty, you did. If you'd heard the way you would speak about yourself, that's how someone speaks about someone they hate. And, like, I don't hate people. Do you know what I mean? I'm not like that. So it was kind of shook me whenever he said that. And I actually went to therapy for some other stuff and started talking about that. And the therapist started talking about my inner child. Like I said, I thought it was ridiculous.
And she, you're like, can I leave? Like, I was like, very uncomfortable right now.
Can I hang up the Zoom call, please? Yeah. But we kept talking about it and she kept asking me questions. And we figured out there was things like the bullying that I blocked out and I hadn't paid attention to because I could remember them like pictures and not the actual experience or the feelings behind them. And she was like, imagine if those things that you're saying to yourself in your head right now, those hard times you're giving yourself, tell that to little Nadia. Say that to 8-year-old Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, you couldn't. She goes, but what's different than 8-year-old Nadia than 27-year-old Nadia?
Crazy.
And something as simple as having that acknowledgement and having that, remembering that that inner child is still within you, makes you tread a bit more softly with yourself and give her what she needs sometimes. Like, I'm still openly the biggest child in the world. I keep Christmas alive in my house. I was devastated when the Disney store closed. Like, that is me.
Do you know what? It's only this very moment that I actually consciously realised that that store's gone.
They did a closing ceremony and everything. I watched it on Facebook Live. I did.
Was it during COVID? When did that happen?
That was about 2 months ago.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe a month and a half ago. They all the staff came out and read a wee letter and all and locked it up with it.
Oh, that
broke my heart. But yeah.
That's like an institution.
I know.
Moment of silence. What? I like what you said, you know, again, like, the inner child never leaves you. And to try and ignore it, you do so at your own peril. And whenever you lock the child up and don't let it speak, it can kind of come out sideways then.
Yeah.
It kind of turn into a bit of a monster even, you know.
Exactly. It can throw tantrums. It's still a part of you. Do you know what I mean? It still has influence on your emotions and how you feel. And that inner child has fueled you and given you so much because they did a lot of the learning. So just because you're an adult now doesn't mean that you shouldn't listen to that child because they're so wise. And sometimes I think children in general see the world in a completely different way. They see it completely unfiltered. And that little child saw your world completely unfiltered.
Wow.
And as adults, we sometimes tend to put filters on it. So I think listening and kind of tuning into that helps you to strip away some of those rose-tinted glasses or random perspectives that we pick up to see things how they were originally, that then you can make your judgment and your next move now.
Yeah, it shatters the story and the illusion of, I knew this thing happened to me, but that's just the way my family is, or like, that's just the way this situation is.
Exactly.
And you can kind of explain your way out of situations instead of just like accepting the reality of that was brutal or that was really difficult or that was hard. And, you know, as with everything, acceptance is sort of the first step. I'm a big, like, I talk about this all the time, like, on air, off air, anyone who listens, like, I'm a big believer that like sensitivity is a real superpower. And to kind of like spin that slightly, like, I think tapping into your inner child a lot, like, is you also tapping into a superpower. And because most of us, like, if we've grown up in Northern Ireland because of a lot of different issues, a lot I can go into them, there is a bit of a, like, callousness, I think, that we've adopted to protect ourselves. A lot of us have grown up kind of carrying heavy burdens from family, of, you know, maybe a parent that had an addiction or a parent that had mental health issues. You know, a lot of our generation have kind of grown up with that in the backdrop. And whenever you can create a safe enough space for that inner child to come out, you know, and you give yourself the ability to become sensitive to the world again, so much can open up. Like, so much joy, like so much playfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, we interviewed a guy recently, a guy called Tony McGarren. He's a world expert. And one of his big things is like bringing play into the workplace.
Yeah.
Bringing play into the professional world and the importance of that is. But then actually, let's just talk about brass tacks. Like your profit will go up mm-hmm. if you incorporate play more. You know what I mean?
It's
not just
exactly.
very. This is like,
no. It makes a tangible difference to people's productivity, people's feeling of belonging and their feeling of being valued. And if you feel valued and like you belong in an environment, you're going to give whatever you can into that environment.
Totally. So let's go there then. Talk to me about your university days, your university experience.
Okay.
So we kind of have the backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, take us into like kind of the what happened next.
So for me, things kind of... I was going to go say went downhill, but it wasn't even. It was a lot of learning.
Okay.
In hindsight, it was a lot of learning. And I can add value to that experience now.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into university, what I didn't realise was I'd already had difficulties with my eating. I had a really unhealthy relationship with food and with exercise, and which later went on to kind of me realising was an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
University was great. So much fun. Love it.
Sure.
And the whole reason I went, I was like, well, how else am I going to move out and be able to afford somewhere? Like, so let's go to Belfast and go to university and use a student loan.
Yeah. Bankroll ourselves of the debt of our future.
Exactly. Let's just do that and get some new experiences. And I loved it. Like, I'm still friends with so many of the people that I met. The girl that I met on my first day of University Halls is my maid of honour next year. Like, we have so many good relationships. But there was a lot of kind of turmoil going on in my life at that time. Parents had separated. There was a lot of, like I say, my relationship with food wasn't great. My relationship with myself wasn't great at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously just being away from home and trying to set up your new support network and even like learning how to use a washing machine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all new.
Yeah. It all plugs in. And it was near the end of kind of first year, early second year, I really got hit badly by depression and anxiety. And through that kind of 3-year process, I was studying psychology. So I was learning about mental health.
Crazy.
I was learning about mental ill health. And I completely was oblivious to the fact that, you know, it shouldn't be so hard to try and dress yourself in the morning
mm-hmm.
and get yourself out of bed. And you shouldn't feel numb. And you shouldn't feel like your heart is in your mouth all the time.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it was like my final year. It was my final year, so a few weeks before my final year exams, and it all came down to I started to kind of really spiral out. I started to drink to try and get to sleep. I started to abuse drugs to an extent as well, and ultimately got suicidal thoughts and kind of went down that road. And thankfully, someone stopped me.
Wow.
Someone, one message was enough to stop me.
Not like literally a text or something?
One text. One text came through at the right time.
That's crazy.
And it shows the importance of showing someone you care, even if it's one message, one word. It was one message that came through at the right moment.
Wow.
And that brought me back to my house and I got into bed. And I wasn't better.
Sure.
People intervened then. My family intervened. My friends intervened. I was so lucky. And I kind of went onto the path of figuring out what all was going on and trying to get myself better. So university, I look back and there's so many amazing experiences.
Yeah.
And for a while it was like, oh, but that was a time that everything fell apart. But I think there's a reason for everything.
Sure.
And it wasn't that everything fell apart. It was that I was neglecting myself and those aspects that I needed to work on. It all accumulated at that time. But the learning that I have from that and the things that I felt then feed into my everyday work now.
Yeah.
Because it gives me another level of empathy and another level of understanding of what it's like to be the patient, the client, the girl that can't get out of her bed, never mind get up and go to class and try and do your life.
Yeah. So, you know, you talk about not having the motivation to, you know, get dressed in the morning,
mm-hmm.
get out of bed, numbness.
Mm-hmm.
So I, all those things, I get it.
Yeah.
Right? So I have like a long history of depression, like mm-hmm. from say 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't have any experience in whatsoever is anxiety.
Okay.
So you got
it's fun.
You got the double whammy, right? So I'm sitting here and I'm like nearly crossing myself, like, geez Louise, like thank God she's still here.
It's like depression doesn't want you to feel anything and anxiety wants you to feel everything, so, and they're both battling to get time.
So I have no concept of like what anxiety is like on that sort of level. Yeah. So like fill that out a wee bit for me. Like how did that play into things? Because and the reason why I'm doing this is because I think it's helpful for people listening to be able to identify stuff in their own life as well.
Oh, totally. Yep. So I think the way that I kind of thought of the two of them working together was literally depression wants you to lie there and feel nothing.
Working together?
Yeah.
Sinister.
I know. We tag team.
Me and more like demonist duo. Like, I'll wait.
And some people see anxiety as this like, meh, she's just feeling a wee bit on edge. Anxiety itself is a normal emotion. Yes. Which you should feel sometimes.
Sure. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Completely. Yeah. You need to feel all
Someone
emotions.
Someone comes into a gun hair, like, with a gun hair, it's like, okay, we should feel
I'd worry about you if you didn't feel anxious. But it's whenever it gets to the extent of it's really impacting your life, it's stopping you leaving your house, it's stopping you getting out of bed, you feel everything, like, 10 times over. You feel guilt, you feel shame, you feel embarrassed, you feel like everyone in the world is against you, people are abandoning you, and it could come from absolutely nothing. It could come from a full stop and a text, and your brain went into overdrive.
So it's like, and I'm just kind of regurgitating because I'm trying to learn, like, would you say anxiety is like a form of like extreme amplification?
Yep, completely. Okay, everything is amplified so much to the extent that your body physiologically reacts to it. And like physiologically, I haven't had panic attacks or anxiety attacks in many years.
Okay.
Last weekend I had one.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was because there was a lot of stuff that had kind of accumulated. And again, it was just a case of, I suppose, there's physiological things you can look after as well, which I'd neglected for a couple of weeks. My own mistake.
Yeah.
But it feels like your chest is so tight that you can't breathe. Your heart hurts and you think it's going to stop. You sweat. I couldn't open and close my hands because everything was so tense.
And is that like... and you would know this because of your research, like, is that like a flight or fight response? Like, what's going on there on like a biological mechanism?
It is, yeah. Okay. It basically, whenever it's anxiety, it is like fight, flight, freeze or fawn. And it just completely, your body's just trying to decide what to do. And as much as your mind and your brain can be saying there's nothing of threat here, you need to try and adapt techniques. And therapists will teach you these.
Yeah.
To try and show your body that it needs to de-escalate. It like escalates and climbs the mountain and then it's stuck up on the mountain and you're trying to find ways to bring it back down.
This is a really stupid example, but like I mentioned, Ormo Baths yoga that happened yesterday. Anna said something, the instructor really interesting. She's like, she kept saying, relax your jaw, relax your jaw, relax your jaw. And I was like, teacher, like, why do you keep asking us to relax our jaw? She was like, because if your jaw is clenched, it signals to your whole body that this is not comfortable and we can't relax and we can't stretch. We need to be tight right now. And I was like, whoa, that's next level right there.
It's all so in tune and you nearly don't even realize how in tune your body is.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's very easy then whenever you're feeling those things, like physically feeling those things, that your mind then races because you're like, what if I am having a heart attack? What if I'm not going to survive this? What if I can't breathe? And it all kind of cycles around. But for me, that's been my experience of anxiety and not being able to speak or move or eat.
Yeah. Okay. So also would love to kind of like zoom in a little bit on the phenomenon that I've seen happen in my own life and other people's life where you're in a bad place. And then you turn to something to try and ease the pain of that bad place, which only pushes you further into the darkness, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the word is for that. Some people would probably feel comfortable throwing the term addiction under that, okay? I don't think we need to go that far, but...
It's like a poor coping mechanism.
There it is. That's far better. Thank you. You're the expert.
I wouldn't say that.
So talk to me about healthy coping mechanisms. And specifically, what I would love to know is, you mentioned the panic attack last week. You mentioned on hindsight, you see, oh, I slipped up on X, Y, and Z. What's X, Y, and Z for you?
So for me, what I had kind of established early on through help from professionals was that your body can be put into that kind of close to the edge of that fight or flight mm-hmm. just by how you're treating it anyway.
Wow.
So like too much caffeine.
Mm.
Too much caffeine gives you heart palpitations. You start to get the shakes. That's very similar to what happens before an anxiety attack.
Wow.
If you're dehydrated, same thing can happen. If you're not eating enough, your body can go into panic mode because you're starving your body. If you forget to eat for a day or two because you're busy, if you're not sleeping enough, it's all about making sure that your body is working like a well-oiled machine
right.
and it can actually function first to cope with everything else.
So you're basically making sure that the foundation's right.
Exactly.
Like the pillars are all in check. You're creating the condition so you have the best chance to kind of thrive before life throws anything else at you.
Completely. Right. And we talk about it so much with the young people that I've worked with because sometimes you're going in and they might have not had breakfast. They've been up to 4 a.m. on YouTube.
Yeah.
They're coming in with like a tin of Monster in their bag.
Yeah,
like, of course you're going to feel anxious. You're full of caffeine and sugar and no food and no sleep. So your body is already kind of on edge and like glitching out a wee bit.
Yeah, great term.
So it's just about trying to level that out so that then you can see right what actually is being kind of triggered mentally.
Yeah.
And what is me just feeling on edge and then panicking because my body feels on edge and then starting into that whole spiral.
So interesting. And as well, just what you said there, it's like, when you have the foundation right, you at least have like a little bit of tiny, tiny extra bit of willpower
mm-hmm.
to then, like, instead of going for the unhealthy coping mechanism, whatever your vice of choice is,
mm-hmm.
And choosing something more positive.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it's very easy to go to those per coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Whether it's because it's what's accessible,
mm-hmm.
whether it's because sometimes it is easier. It seems easier in that moment, or whether it's learned behavior, because quite often we're picking up stuff from our new age and we retain that
mm-hmm.
and you might not think you retain it, but that's what comes out then in those tough moments.
Yeah.
So even things like if the way you respond whenever you're angry,
mm-hmm.
I can guarantee how you respond when you're angry could be similar to one of your parents, even if you don't like it.
Yeah.
And you have to actively try and change that.
How old are you?
27.
Yeah, I'm 26. I feel like once you pass the 25 threshold, the shadows of your parents start to kind of like reemerge.
And you realize they're human.
And the positives of your parents too, right? Let's not paint a negative
picture. No, definitely.
But you know, you start to, something happens, something comes out of you and you're like, whoa, hello dad.
Oh yeah.
Or something comes out of you, you're like, hello mom. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You're like, interesting, like this is very bizarre.
You're open to it.
I've heard like from other people that like, they're like, yeah, just buckle up because like your 30s are kind of like, it's a lot of this.
Yeah, like you're open to kind of acknowledging where it came from, I think.
Yeah.
From that age, you're like open to accept, okay, that was very like my mum or that was very like my dad, whether you like it or not.
Awareness and acceptance, I think, is the first step. You know?
Exactly.
If you can see it, you're halfway there.
Completely.
Very cool. I'm going to ask you a really rude question, okay?
Okay, go for it.
And like, I hope it doesn't come across as rude, but it's in my head and I'd love to do it. Like, going through everything that you've gone through,
mm-hmm.
That was a terrible way to phrase this question, by the way. Talk about fight or flight response. You know, it's probably not even going to be that big a deal. I really admire you and I think you're incredibly brave for entering a beauty pageant after the experiences that you've had
mm-hmm.
and again just to lay all the cards on the table and we can cut this bit if it doesn't work, like in my head, like, you know, to have walked through an eating disorder and walked through all the kind of negative chatter inside your head, in like, for me, if I was in your shoes, I'm like, dude, the last place I'm going is to like a freaking beauty pageant. So like, you've gone to a place that I wouldn't have the courage mm-hmm. to have gone to myself
mm-hmm.
So why on earth or how on earth did you get pulled into the universe that is Miss Universe?
Okay, so I think two things.
Right.
The first and most obvious and most well-known is absolutely pure stubbornness. I like a challenge and I am a wee bit stubborn.
Great.
And
formidable.
Yeah. I know. And it's a nightmare when you're playing Truth or Dare.
Mm.
But it was a friend of mine and he had passed a comment when I was in halls one day.
Right.
About, because I had done modelling from I was 16.
Cool.
And there wasn't a lot of people who modelled.
Not to derail you, okay? How did you get into that? Because I don't know a lot of people at 16, and no one I know in school modeled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so like it's kind of niche. So how did you do it?
So I basically was friends with a hairdresser, and my mum was friends with her mum.
Love it.
And they were all around at our house one Saturday night, and our mums were having a few glasses of wine, and the daughter, the hairdresser, had said, "You'd really suit your hair like super short, like Frankie from the Saturdays used to be short." And I goes, "Well, do you want to do it?"
Nice.
And she took a pair of scissors at like 1 a.m. in my kitchen and cut my hair. Literally cut my hair. And she was like, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe you just let me do that. Would you be my hair model?" Because a hair model meant that they would come up with a color and a design to dye your hair and cut your hair, and you didn't really have a say. So she was just excited that someone was like going to let her just do whatever she wanted.
Guinea pig mood.
Literally.
Yeah.
So I started modeling for her and the salon at hair competitions, and then started to network, started modeling for then the makeup artists, and grew it out that way.
Crazy.
So a lot of it was just networking.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, my friends, you couldn't hide the hair. My hair was white and purple and orange. It was red and yellow. Like, it was everything.
Yeah.
So they all knew. And again, like you said, it was kind of niche.
Yeah.
So some of them thought it was really weird. And there were definitely comments like, "Are you not meant to be really pretty to be a model?"
Oof.
And I was like, "No, actually, you just have to look a bit different."
I'm resilient. I can handle a comment like that. Going home, journaling the crap out of that day.
Literally, yeah. I was like, "Hey, I promise I can do my job." But so this guy I'd known from school, and he was like, he was on Facebook and saw a beauty competition and saw this girl in this big, gorgeous, sparkly dress. And he said, "Oh my goodness, Nadia, imagine how ridiculous you'd look if you were on stage in a big sparkly dress."
Oh, I love it.
Because I was very like rock chick, love my rock tees and my denim cut off, some eyeliner.
Boy.
Oh, of course, of course. And so that was me, and he kind of thought this was ridiculous. So I was like, "Well, I'll just show you how ridiculous it is." And I went to my room and I applied to a pageant.
Oh my goodness. That is one of the most stubborn things I've ever heard.
I'd never even watched a beauty pageant. Never watched one. Never watched one before I left. It was an absolute disaster. Funny. Such a disaster. But the girls that I met there, I still talk to now.
Awesome.
And I was 19. Well, maybe 20. But I still talk to them now. And I kind of got a bit of an insight then through meeting some of those girls, what pageantry really meant to them. And it wasn't the dresses. And it wasn't the big hair. It was that this is what I care about. And we need to speak about it. And obviously there's the typical channels you can go down, but they're not getting as much attention. So let's go a really alternative route and draw attention in a glamorous way, because then you're hitting a whole new market of people.
So this is key. This is so good. I'm so glad you took us here. Like, that is something that I have learned through doing this show. I'm trying to think how to even learn this. I can tell you. We interviewed a former Miss NI, and we interviewed Alison Clark. And they explained to me what pageantry really is. And I, like the whole world, has a had a very preconceived notion of what a beauty pageant is, the types of people that entered it. Very negative, very shallow, like very judgmental. And then, like you say, the people behind it, it's like all it is for them is a platform to springboard what they're passionate about on top of. So that's very, very cool. So, okay, you go to the one beauty contest when you're 19, 20. You have a good time. You kind of like have the veil pulled over your, or, you know, your eyes are opened to the reality of the beauty pageant world. You go in for more. What's next?
I went into this pageant because there wasn't very many pageants here. So basically how pageantry works, it's there's always a global organization, like a global business. And there's kind of like five top global pageants, and they all obviously are different brands, different organizations. And for a country to send a delegate to the global competition, there needs to be a director in that country. So someone needs to buy the license off the global organization.
It's like a pyramid scheme.
Someone needs to pay thousands of pounds.
Oh my word!
To that organization, so they can use their branding, have the pageant here, and then send a delegate to go and compete.
And then, in theory, they also can profit off the local activities. Okay, so it makes sense. It's like a McDonald's franchise.
Literally. So
over
years, whenever you build sponsorship, you can then obviously make money off of that.
Yeah,
and if your girl wins the global competition, I think you can, some of them offer you prizes and offer you money and stuff.
Okay.
So there wasn't a lot of directors here. And there was a new pageant that kind of was new to here called Miss Earth.
Okay.
And I was like, right, well, I'll go and see what that's like. Because it was intriguing me, because the whole purpose of that was to raise environmental awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And every girl was working on something to raise environmental awareness. So it kind of challenged you to learn more about what you actually cared about.
Yeah.
So I entered that and had a fantastic experience, like made some of the best friends that I have now. And gave it my all a couple times, and it just didn't, I didn't hit the mark. It just wasn't my year.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I've given it my best. So I can't give any more. So it's just obviously not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped back, and a new pageant had come in, and they'd kind of said, why don't you apply? But this one didn't have a set theme.
Okay.
You had to come up with your own, like bring your own kind of passion to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of around the time where I had seen a couple of other local models talk about their mental health struggles publicly, because I was very private about mine at the time.
Yeah.
And it was a girl called Caroline McMenamin from Derry. And she was doing modelling, and she was in the paper and talked about having OCD and anxiety disorder and struggling with depression. And I remember reading the story and thinking, but she's still working. People are still hiring her. Because I was worried that if people found out I was a model with depression, they'd think, well, what if she doesn't show up one day because she can't get out of bed?
Yeah.
What if she's unreliable, so we won't hire her?
And that's the professional stigma that is very, very real.
Yeah. You know? And I, so that, for her, she kind of crushed that for me, and she was like, right, well, you know what, this hasn't stopped me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, maybe if that helped me, if I speak, it'll help someone else.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I ever went into a pageant and spoke about mental health.
Class.
Spoke about my own experiences with it, and I won that year. And
nice.
I went, yeah, I know, it was a big shock.
So great.
I went to Egypt in 2017 and competed globally.
What an experience.
Oh, it was phenomenal. And like, again, Miss Canada, I was talking to the other day, and they're the best people, and I thought that was me done. But Miss Universe is like the biggie.
Is it the big dog?
It's the big dog.
Wow.
Like, it's the peak.
Okay.
It's the one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah.
And it's very like glamorous.
Yeah.
It's not as conservative as most other pageants. It's very kind of glamorous. It's that hybrid between model and beauty queen. And brings a lot of fashion into it. So it was very exciting. You could have a lot more creativity. And it was rebranded and relaunched here.
Awesome.
And I went and watched the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, I want to see what this is actually like.
Yeah, what's the vibe?
Yes.
What's going on here?
And I remember I went into this big production. And the one thing I noticed was every single girl on that stage, every single one of the top 30 girls looked completely different to the next.
Mm-hmm.
There was all heights. All skin tones,
all
shapes, all sizes.
It's not the cliche you think of 20 years ago where it's Barbie.
No.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Yeah.
So I entered in 2019, and to my surprise, and I mean, I was probably more surprised than anybody, I got top 10.
Nice.
And that was a massive achievement for me. And then COVID hit, and they actually were going to do another pageant, but obviously virtual. And I was like, you know what? I'm getting married next year. This is the last year I can compete in anything. And, you know, I'll just give it a go and I'll just have fun.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to look back and regret not giving it a go to have that fun.
Yeah.
Because I'd grown so much the year before. The amount of training they give to all of the girls really helped me to grow and my confidence to grow. So I was like, worst case scenario, I learned something. And yeah, and then I won.
Crazy.
And the rest is history.
And the crown is still in your possession?
The crown is, yes. So actually today...
The end of your reign is nigh.
Today?
Today we announced
the next girl who's going to Miss Universe.
Awesome.
And, but obviously we haven't got to do official handover yet, so that'll be happening in very soon.
Very cool.
But yeah, so it was very surreal, a very surreal year to... lead. But you know what, it brought its own challenges, and I think as an organization we learned a lot, and there was a lot of new things that we tried because we had to.
Yeah.
And the things that we're going to keep on and still keep, whether it's real life or a virtual pageant. But Ireland showed up and they represented despite everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you know, I might actually ask from you, I might ask for a link to your favorite kind of pageant orientated podcast
Okay.
that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to bypass like 20 minutes
okay.
of all the Miss Universe chat that I could give you.
Okay.
Because I really want to get to
yeah.
your work today.
Yeah.
And I really want to kind of give that the platform. There's so many questions I have, like, you know, to give like a little bit of clickbait for people, like, you know, like stepping aside and you got caught up in the big media storm because you, like,
you know, all that stuff.
You find that?
I find that. It's so fun. It's so
it went viral in so many places.
So massive. I mean, excuse me for butchering this guy. This is literally like just RAM memory that I'm using. Like, the dress you wore, like the Irish dress that was like painted and all.
The like costume?
The traditional sort of like crazy. I'm sure there's like amazing stories behind that. And then even just like all the people you met, all, you know, the experience of actually being there. There's so much richness in there. But I would like to talk about, okay, you win, you go, you come home. What happens next? You know, is there like a come down from these events? Is there a bit of a, like, 2 months of kind of just, like, meh after something like that?
So people in that kind of pageant world, and I only recently heard it, they say it's like a pageant hangover.
Oh, great. Yeah. I love that that term exists.
Yeah, you have, like, a pageant hangover where, because you've been going on pure adrenaline.
Yeah.
For, if it's an international pageant, it's weeks and weeks, and then you're prepping beforehand. So you do, all the adrenaline drops out of your body. I literally remember feeling it drop out of my body when I was in Miami airport about to fly home, and I was exhausted.
Yeah.
And people kept asking for photos, and I was like, thank you so much for support. But in my head, I was like, I'm really honored by this, but I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I literally remember saying to my director, I was like, I don't want to hear from you for a week. I love you, but I just, I want a week where I don't have to think about anything. I can just sleep.
Yeah.
I eat. That's it.
Rebuild.
Rebuild myself because I was wiped out because you're constantly switched on.
Yep.
But yeah, no, that's a real tangible thing.
Crazy. So, Uber Heroes.
Yes.
Did you know about them before you came home?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You were involved with them before you came
home?
Tell us what Uber Heroes is and how you got involved.
So Uber Heroes is a program that's the lead program that Hope for Life use. It's a children's mental health early intervention program.
Mm-hmm.
And early intervention is key, in my opinion. We need to be proactive. We've been reactive for so long, and there's amazing counsellors and therapists out there, but they're trying to catch up with waiting lists. So we need to think long term. We need to try and provide skills and tools and awareness to kids and young people that they can put in place before they deteriorate. So that's kind of where I found myself working, because that's where I think would have really helped me. And I think it's somewhere that's been neglected a little bit. And it's a lot of charity organisations out there that are kind of picking up that. So Uber Heroes do it a little bit differently.
Okay.
Because you need to make learning fun. You need to make it stand out from all the other talks these kids are going to get.
You need to awaken the attention of the inner child in the
exactly.
child. Exactly. The child. The children.
The children's. And you need to make it real.
Yeah.
You need to make it practical. We can't teach kids something and not tell them how to practically use it. It's a waste of everyone's time then.
It's like the classic, like, you know, I wish my school had taught me how to do my taxes or like the budget or fix my car or something like that. It's like, yeah, and I also wish they had taught me like mindfulness or something.
Exactly. You know what I mean? How to actually do it.
Yeah.
They tell me about resilience.
In the tool belt. So when it comes, I can reach in and grab it. And I know
completely.
What
it is. It's like learning first aid. You mean, you hope you never have to use that.
That's the
but
that's a way
it's good to know. Like, it's good to know in case you do.
Yeah.
So yes, we create these programs and we deliver them through the use of comic books. Now, every single comic book is based on a true story from a young person here in Northern Ireland. We listen to their sometimes awful experiences, their history, their past, things they've dealt with, maybe mistakes they've made, things they wish they'd done better, and make it into a comic. And that young person has full control over that whole process.
So they're directly involved in the creative process.
Oh, completely. They have to be.
That is epic.
We have to respect their story and make sure it's being represented in the right way. So we will record it and we will transcribe it anonymously, delete the recording, and then send that to a scriptwriter. They write 4 pages at a time. Every 4 pages that come through, we send back to that young person for them to check.
Workflow, that
is. Once that's done, we send it, goes to the illustrator, they illustrate it, we send that to the young person, so they have full control, they see it before anyone else does. And there's even times where we have a small team, and for instance our most recent comic, No Man's Land, I have never met the young person whose story it is, because that young person is more comfortable speaking to a man. Wow. So the man on our team went and spoke to him, and he keeps that person's, even their real name, anonymous from us.
Wow.
Because we have to respect their story.
So
we will go into a classroom. We introduce the superheroes. There are 5 OG heroes.
Right, the Avengers.
Basically, the mindfulness Avengers. And each of them represent a pillar of mental well-being.
Huh.
So there is one for resilience. He's called Invictus. Mm-hmm. That's Latin for overcomer.
Is there a movie called Invictus?
Yes, there is. And there's the Invictus Games. Then there is Nadase, which is Taiwanese for hope. There's Veritas, which is Latin for truth. We have Fortress, which represents strength and fitness and your body and mind working together. And then there's Domine, that's Latin for teacher or master. And he represents intelligence and kind of making the right choices for you and identifying those. And now we have so many other overheroes that the kids create. Kids create the heroes. The kids create the villains. Because who am I to say what villains are in a 10-year-old's life?
Can you give us a couple of villains?
Oh, yes. Okay, right, yes. So one of my favourites, probably Per Choice Words.
We all love villains, you know.
Literally.
He's from the cartoon Hercules, the Disney movie is my favourite.
Superstar, yeah.
Awesome dude.
One of the villains that I think is really, really well imagined and was there before I joined the team is the Puppeteer. The puppeteer always shows up as a set of hands with 3 puppets attached by strings.
Ooh.
And each puppet represents silence, guilt, and shame. And that the puppeteer is representative of abuse. So here in Northern Ireland, 48% of people who have been victims of abuse go on to become abusers in the future because of the learned behaviour.
They become the puppet hands.
And even though that abuser isn't in their life anymore, he's still pulling the strings from the trauma from the past and the learned behaviour. So you need to be able to try and cut those strings so you can make your own choices. You're not a puppet. So the puppeteer shows up then whenever we're discussing abuse, and we try and explain how those strings still have control years later unless they're cut.
Yeah.
We have the illusionist for drugs. We have Favos for fear. Relicta is isolation. She has multiple arms, 2 to hold the victim in close and keep them away from everyone, and 4 to push everyone else back from helping her.
Wow.
There's like 20 odd villains now and they're all created by kids.
So cool.
And then we just get them re-illustrated. We have Marvel and DC illustrators who illustrate our comics.
Serious?
Yeah, because it needs to be valuable to the kids.
Yeah.
So Marvel and DC use teams.
Yeah.
They'll have teams of freelancers to work on comics.
Brilliant.
So we have about 6 or 7 of them now in our contact, and we will send it out to them and say, look, this is the next story. Who would have free time to do this? And they use this as their smaller project in between their bigger Marvel and DC projects. And then every kid that creates a hero or a villain, they get the first kind of poster of the re-illustrated version of their character signed by the artist.
I'm just, my brain can't even compute what question I want to ask next, because I'm just so in awe of like how actual badass this is.
Well, you know what? We're illustrating someone's story.
Yeah.
Someone who's been really brave, someone who wants to help other people, someone who wants to show other kids in Northern Ireland that they're not by themselves and that there is hope, that things will get better. They want them to learn from mistakes they may have made without having to make their own mistakes. So we need to show respect to that. We need to show young people that they're valued and their voice is so important. And that is continuous. Like even today, I was in a school today, we get feedback slips. We do surveys. We do questionnaires. We have Ask an Uberhero a question online where kids can go and use that as a helpline. They can send in illustrations and stories and topics they want covered. So we deliver that as a program where we read the comic together. We talk about serious issues like abuse, self-harm, depression, neglect, children in care, you name it, we've probably talked about it. And the fact that it's real, it makes it hit home a little more. But then, even better, once we've read it, the kids identify the obvious and the not so obvious issues, and then come up with solutions of what they could have done, or what if they were the person's friend, the lead character's friend, what might have helped. So they're building mental health strategies and action plans without consciously realizing it, because we do everything in the third person. Instead of saying, what were you scared of in lockdown, we'll say, well, what do you think Jill might have been scared of? Because she went to school one day, came home, and then wasn't allowed out of her house for 2 months. So how might she have felt? And it gives them that blanket of security to answer questions openly.
I mean, that's just a really useful framework just to have in your own head, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the classic, you know, and again, it's a little bit, I'm grasping at straws here, because I'm trying to do a callback, as all good podcasters do. It's a little bit like the start of our conversation, mm-hmm. where we talked about like having compassion on yourself, and it's yep. hard to have compassion on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But the classic thing is, okay, like, what advice would you give a friend of yours?
Exactly.
Or what would you do for a friend of yours who was in this situation? And usually mm-hmm. it is significantly different to how you would treat yourself.
And it's that in action, and it works. Like, today I was with a P7 class, and they had been visited before by other members of our team to go through another comic. And I went in there today and I hadn't worked with that class. And I had said, have you heard of the Uber Heroes before? And they were like, yes, we read the comic about Jill that talked about self-harm. And there was this villain and this villain. And then we did comic 2 that talked about whoever, and he was a boxer and he got injured. And the retention recall is so much higher, because you're using art and drama and open conversation. You're putting characters' names to it and using storytelling.
And we are storytelling beings.
We remember stories so much quicker and more effectively than we will a statistic or a bullet point.
Let me ask you this, and just be blunt.
Okay.
What do you need? Do you need money? Do you need talent? Do you need volunteers? What do you need?
So we've been going for 3 years.
Yeah.
We are such a small team. We've literally just been working at doing the job.
Surviving.
We need people to know that we're here. Because ideally we would love more volunteers to come into schools with us.
Okay, so you need people who will
always taking volunteers that will go to schools.
Okay, cool.
And ultimately we're not funded.
Sure.
We don't have core government funding.
Yeah.
So we would like to be able to talk to people and see if we can get fundraisers, see if we can work with corporates, just to keep it going. We apply for community grants, and we're always just hoping that we get those community funds in. But again, it's hard whenever people. We are relatively unknown still, because our target audience are primary school and early secondary school kids.
They're not shouting about you on LinkedIn.
We have wait lists of schools. We go into just under 300 schools in Northern Ireland. There's only three members of the team up until 6 months ago.
That's
plus some volunteers. Now we have four members of the team, and we have a placement, amazing placement student for this year.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yeah, because I was a psychology student, so I kind of was like, as a ex-psychology student, this would be amazing to have an understanding of.
Totally.
And we rely then volunteers. We rely heavily on them. So this is the first time we've been able to kind of simultaneously do a couple of small schools at a time.
Yeah.
But we're in schools all over the country.
Yeah.
Everywhere. But it's just getting the word out that we're here. We also offer bespoke training. We originally always just did bespoke training for corporates. So if any corporates want mental health training, let us know. We'll come in and deliver it. We'll tailor it to you and your business.
So this is like, I'm a big dog that has like 50 staff members. You're going to come in and give my employees tools to mm-hmm. help them with their own mental well-being and stuff.
Yeah, you tell us what some of the issues are, whether it's kind of, if you have big timelines and deadlines to hit, then stress is obviously something. If you have maybe there's been an incident or a loss recently, then you maybe need coping strategies for that. Whatever you need, would come in for a coffee, listen to what you need first, and then we'll develop it around you. Even conflict resolution is something we'll do. And we're also working on a very exciting project next year. I just want to get the word out about. So we were in schools during the pandemic.
Give a month, because I don't know if this is going to go out in December or January.
That's okay. Okay, so there's a very exciting project happening in March.
Yay!
Yes! And so what we're going to do is whenever the pandemic was happening, if schools were open, we were in schools.
Wow.
Full PPE in there working away, because the kids needed us there.
Sure.
So, and the one thing that kind of registered with us because the kids created a lockdown comic during the first lockdown for us. During the second lockdown, we did face mask competitions. So the two winners, we printed their face masks. They got the first edition of all the face masks and now we give them out in schools. So during the next lockdown, we're like, we need to do something. We need to be there for the kids. And we'd remembered every class we went to, these kids had told us amazing things they had done for their community, for their friends, for their family, to keep spirits up during the pandemic. They were so kind. And kindness is a completely underrated word and completely undervalued, in my opinion.
And it's a positive atomic bomb.
Oh, it makes such a difference. That's such a good way of referring to it. It's so powerful.
It's a bit brutal. I'm gonna break you, but
I love it because it is. Like, one kind act that means nothing to you can make a difference in someone's life without even realizing it. So we literally, in a week, came up with the Uber Hero Kindness Awards. We had hundreds of nominations. Mm-hmm. Kids nominated their best friends. Parents and teachers nominated kids. And we got an independent judging panel to go through it all and pick the top 30. We notified the top 30. We arranged an online celebration ceremony because we were in lockdown. Literally. I was in heaven.
You're in your element here.
Oh. So we had to do it online because we were still in lockdown. But what the kids didn't know, so we told them about the event. We told them that they were a top 30 nominee. So they were all getting certificates and stuff anyway. And we were going to award the top 10 at the ceremony. But what they didn't know is, you're going to do it via Zoom. We want them to still have fun. So we made party boxes. We had fruit juice Prosecco bottles with champagne glasses. We had party poppers, glow sticks, crisps, chocolate,
so
banners.
So glamorous. Where did those ideas come from, I wonder?
Not even me. We got so excited literally packing these boxes up and we delivered them to either the schools or the kids' house that morning.
Cute.
And it was top secret. The parents gave it to the children 10 minutes before the ceremony so they could get all partied up. And we did the ceremony. Everyone got their party box or certificate. The top 10 got proper crystal awards. Adam B sent merchandise to give to them. He sent them a message of congratulations and little handwritten cards.
Wow.
They got Amazon vouchers. And 100% of the teachers, parents and kids asked to do it again.
Wow.
So.
We're doing it. In person this time.
In person.
Oh, yeah.
Even bigger.
Let's go.
In a hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Red carpet, photographers. So we want people to nominate their kids. We're looking for sponsors as well to buy tables, to donate auction items, because we want to make it a massive night for celebrating these kids.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make them feel like they are the superstars for the night and show them just how much we all care, how much the people of Northern Ireland care about the kindness that they show to each other.
Yeah. And we didn't get into it. Sorry, Carl, if you're listening. You know, both of us have experience with Young Enterprise.
Oh, yes.
And, like, I remember, like, those big events
mm-hmm.
in big locations mm-hmm. with red carpet and how, like, pivotal they were.
Yeah.
And, like, those are memories that, like, you know, throughout later teens and early 20s, you think about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they stand out and it's hard to put a value on them.
Yeah.
And they are immeasurable.
It does.
In every sense of the word.
And it makes, I think especially for children and young people, it makes them feel like their voice and their actions have value and make a difference.
Yeah.
Because they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're not to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Children are meant to be heard and meant to be congratulated and celebrated for the things that they do.
So awesome. Well, we will put a link to obviously your website. If anyone is moved by what they've heard, and I imagine people will be because I'm moved, like just hearing it, I'm like so many times in this show, I'm like, I just can't believe this is happening in Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, it's like, I can't believe that like we don't know about it, if mm-hmm. you know what I mean. And I can't believe more people aren't stepping up to do something, like to see more of it happen, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. So, no, I admire your work and everything you guys have done. It's super cool.
Well, this means the world to us, having us here. So thank you so much.
No, I'm excited. There's usually a whole ream of like stock questions we ask. I'm going to cut it slightly.
Yeah.
And I'll give you just a few. So this is a complete shift of gears, okay? So like feel it happening
Da-da-da.
In your brain, okay?
Yeah.
We're going to do a little transition here. A little moment of silence, okay? The plane is starting to land. Is everyone ready? Okay, good. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland, dead or alive, out for a glass of fruit juice Prosecco, who would you take and why?
Carol Fitzsimons, obviously.
Come on!
For old time's sake.
I mean, she would prefer if it was red wine, probably.
For sure. I'll not say no.
Amazing. CEO of Young Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Incredible woman whose domino effect and ripple effect has changed many young people's lives.
Completely.
Both of us included.
Oh, definitely.
Are you happy for me to say that?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely wouldn't be here without Carol and the work that Young Enterprise does. If you could go back in time to an 18-year-old Nadia, what advice would you give her?
Stop giving yourself such a hard time and dress how you want to dress. Just wear your AC/DC shirt wherever you want.
Yeah. Did you ever have Doc Martens?
I do now.
You do now?
Yeah. I didn't then, but
earlier
I do
when
now.
You said like punk, I was like, I just pictured you like wearing these like yellow Doc Martens.
Oh, my Miss Universe video, because everyone has a video to play on stage in the background.
Yeah.
I think I was the first ever to be in a black tulle tutu and Doc Martens in my video.
Badass.
Loved it.
Yeah. I'm like bridging the gap, right? So I have like dad Doc Martens.
Mm.
I'm like, this is obviously an audio show, but I put my dirty grassy boot on the table here. And they're like not that punky.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can kind of pull them off, like business casual
yeah.
sort of vibes. But it was very much outside of my comfort zone.
I think you can go more.
I know.
I think you can.
But now that I'm like, it's like a gateway drug. It's like now I'm like in through the door.
It's
I'm
dangerous.
Like, it's like, should I get like Best Buy yellow Doc Martens?
Should I just buy shares in Doc Martens?
Should I get green Docs next? You know? Yeah, I'll probably transition to black, and then that would be the end of my fashion confidence.
I'd buy Best of Belfast docks, though. I would.
Yeah?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Would you be into that?
I'd buy them. Yeah.
I've actually thought about, like, there's a shelf over there that's like a shrine to, like, previous guests, you know, if people have stuff they can put up. Actually, I need one of your comics.
I meant to bring you some when I was in the school first, so I will leave you off a selection.
I will pay whatever it takes to make
Here,
that happen.
I'll leave you a selection of them.
Because that would be awesome to have up there. I'm like, for some reason, I'm mad. It's like, should I just get like a yellow Doc Martin and get people to sign it? I want something that people can sign.
You should get it only if I can sign it.
Also, here's me like trying to like end the show and then instantly getting derailed to like going down a rabbit hole.
We're back.
This question is usually optional. I'm actually not going to let you off the hook.
Oh no.
Because. You've set us up beautifully for it earlier in the conversation, okay? So this is a question that, like, I ask, sometimes it flops, and I cut it, and we go back to the final question, that is, what was the advice
I'm worried
that
now.
You would give? And I always say to people, please take your time. This long silence can be edited out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Should I do more prep? Should I hype it up even more? Yeah, let's put even
kinda
more
terrified.
Pressure on it. Right, okay. How do I hype it up more, okay? It doesn't have to be the actual answer. It can just be kind of like your initial impulse or the first thing that comes out
okay.
of your mouth.
Okay.
Is everyone ready?
Who's that?
Boom, 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 boom. Nadia Sayers, what is the kindest thing that somebody has ever done for you?
Letting me know that I made a difference to them. One message.
I'm really glad you brought that up because mm-hmm. I meant to say something earlier, and this is how I'm actually going to end the show. And this is not a toot your horn moment. There has been two times in my life, I actually feel like I might cry. Ooh, here we go. Where I have had a hunch to reach out to people.
Mm-hmm.
My God, it's the first time I'm crying on the show. Literally just like, you know, if you have that voice that just says, like, just do it.
Yeah.
And very often you ignore it. And I did it. One of them was a primary school friend, one was someone else. And the message I got back was, tonight was the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say it whenever you shared that was part of your story as well. It's like, just encourage all of us, and I try and encourage myself all the time, like, those wee hunches, those wee gut feelings, like,
they're there
action,
for a reason.
You know, and whether, whatever you believe, is it mystical and magical? Is it just a gut feeling? Is it just your subconscious can see things that you can't see? We clues along the way. But, like, it costs you hardly anything, and it could mean everything to somebody.
Completely.
So, yeah. Dude, what a ride. I was not expecting this at all. So, thank you. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. It's been really awesome to have a chat and hear more about your story. And I really appreciate you being here.